Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Try Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost, built for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime, incredible load times, and 24/7 WordPress priority support, your sites will be lightning fast with global reach. And with Bluehost Cloud, your sites can handle surges in traffic, no matter how big. Plus, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. Get started now at Bluehost.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, for Colombia Calling. This is episode 267. For all of those of you who tuned into episode 266, I know it was a great episode with Angus McQueen, the documentary filmmaker, recorded there in Mombos. I was up there and our paths crossed as Angus came with his family through Mombos. And so we were fortunate enough to get him on the show, and we got a little bit of an insight into the world's famous hostage, or of course former hostage, Ingrid Betancourt, held for 6 years by the FARC guerrillas in the jungles of southern Colombia. Of course, we learned a little bit more about El Chapo and indeed Diego Maradona, because Angus is putting together a series and a documentary series right now about Diego Maradona and has permission to follow him around as he coaches the Culiacan football team in Mexico's second division. So fascinating stuff there. But in this episode 267, we're going to take on some more, let's say, hard-hitting issues. Not highbrow, perhaps, but hard-hitting in any case. With the strikes taking place and 18-plus days of blockades in southern Colombia, southwestern Colombia, Cauca, Huila, and potentially in other locations, we thought it was time that we spoke to somebody who knows all about this. And who better to bring on the show than a representative of the Nasa indigenous people from that region? Now, our friend Irvin Liz has been on the show before, but talking about his coffee production and sales overseas. He's a striking young man in that he's won scholarships to study overseas, I believe in Scandinavia and in the US, and he's here back in Colombia marketing coffee for his region and selling it, toasting it, and so on. But we're going to talk about his region, Cauca, then, and what's taking place, what the protests want, who the protesters are, and what they're, you know, protesting for. I think it's very important that we discuss these things, because for those of you overseas, you're not going to get any information about this anywhere, really, unless you're really trawling through the specialist press in Spanish. You're not going to see anything in the mainstream press in English about these massive blockades in southwestern Colombia and blocking the Pan-American Highway. So we're going to talk about that with Irvin Liz, who is of the Nasa indigenous people, and he's there. He will be here to tell us more about what's going on and why the people are not just the indigenous people of the region. It's really not an indigenous strike, and as he will clearly tell us and set us straight. So we're going to leave you for just a minute, and you'll get the update, the news segment with Adrian Alsmer of Columbia Reports. He's the director of Columbia Reports. That's columbiareports.com on the internet. And yes, you get the inside track on all the news taking place in Colombia at this time through this segment from Adrian Alsmer. And then after that, we'll be straight back talking to Irvin Liz about the blockades and protests in southwest Colombia. Thank you again for tuning in. I'm Richard McCall. This is Columbia Calling. Please don't go away.
My name is Adrian Alsma, and this is the news for Columbia Calling for April 2, 2019. The refusal to not sign off on Colombia's war crimes tribunal seems to be ending in a major humiliation for President Iván Duque. The right-wing Radical Change Party said Thursday it would dismiss Duque's objections, making it likely that they will be sent back to the presidential palace by Congress. Without legislative support, the president would effectively be forced to ratify the transitional justice system that he and his far-right party, the Democratic Center, have opposed for years. Radical Change leader Germán Vargas accused the government of bribing Congress by promising administrative jobs in exchange for legislative support. President Iván Duque has had trouble pushing his government's hardline agenda through Congress, especially in the House where his coalition is in the minority. Vargas' claim is curious considering that the former vice president is widely considered one of the most corrupt politicians in Colombia. Colombia's two largest cities, Bogotá and Medellín, have difficulty keeping their economies running because pollution is turning the air toxic. For weeks, the cities have been going in and out of states of alert, during which half the city's cars are banned during rush hour. The excessive pollution is caused by deficient control of industry and poorly filtered gasoline produced by national oil company Ecopetrol. Hundreds of farmers from northern Colombia have been displaced because of ongoing violence between paramilitary and guerrilla groups. The displacements began last week when heavily armed men ordered the inhabitants of entire hamlets in the south of Cordoba to vacate the area in the midst of anti-government protests. According to locals, the military has ignored alerts sent out by the ombudsman and pleas for help by the locals. The prosecution unit of Colombia's War Crimes Tribunal has reportedly requested the resignation of 40 prosecutors and prosecution delegates to investigate possible corruption. The move comes weeks after the arrest of one assistant prosecutor who was caught red-handed accepting money from an undercover agent of the Prosecutor General's office. Once the corruption investigations are closed, Prosecution Chief Giovanni Alvarez will decide whether the judicial officials will be sacked or will be allowed to stay. Colombia's largest cement company, Argos, has received its 12th court order to return dispossessed land to displaced farmers. With the sentence, the company has become the primary beneficiary of the theft of an area the size of Belgium that took place during the country's armed conflict. The company was already controversial because of its price-fixing practices as part of an illegal business cartel. This is the end of this week's news bulletin. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
So we're back. This is Colombia Calling, episode 267. We're here with Ervin Liz, who's of the NASA people in Cauca, from Cauca indeed. Ervin was on the Colombia Calling podcast on episode 201. That was September 2017. Be sure to tune into it to hear about his projects, coffee growing and selling coffee, high quality, organic, fair trade coffee overseas, so to the US principally. But we've got him on the show to talk about various subjects. But before I go into those, Ervin, welcome back on Colombia Calling.
Thank you very much, Richard. I am very glad to be here, and welcome to everybody who is listening to the podcast. Indeed, my name is Ervin Liz, and I am from the NASA indigenous community from primarily Cauca, but we are in more departments as well. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. Ervin, before we get into sort of more of the news side of things, let's talk about the coffee market, because this is your principal job. You know, your family produce coffee up there in Cauca. How's the market at the moment?
That's right. So before I talk about the coffee, I just wanted to clarify here that my primary job is, of course, the coffee. We're going to be talking here about the situation in Cauca because it concerns with my people and it concerns to me as well. But that should not be taken as the point of view of the Colombian coffee connection. Mm-hmm. Just making sure that that's put forward. Yeah. So having that being said, yes, coffee is going really well. Right now I am selling coffee primarily here in Bogota. Mm-hmm. We're preparing some samples of a different type of coffee that we're going to be sending to the U.S. This is a natural and a honey as well, which is, again, a different type of coffee. It's different from the regular washed coffee that we Colombians mainly produce. Mm-hmm. And so that's going very well. There is also a project that I am looking to see if it gets approved. So basically, I'm applying for a fund to send coffee over to Europe.
Cool.
It's not going to be too much money, but if the project does actually get approved, I will be able to start selling coffee throughout Europe, mainly in the UK, towards the end of August this year. So it's going really well. Looking forward, we are selling quite a lot of coffee here in Bogota. I just received a new shipment this morning, another 120-pound batch. Mm. Which is getting sold in about a week as of now. So it's going well.
That's very good. So do check this out, Colombian Coffee Connection.
That's right.
That's the website. And of course, there's the whole story and the blog about lots of the money that goes back into the community. This is fair trade. This is to make a difference on the ground amongst the small coffee growers there in Cauca.
That's right. So part of the coffee that we sell is produced by my family, but also part of it is bought from neighbors. As of now, we're working with four other neighbors. Mm-hmm. So the coffee that gets sold here in Colombia, some of it comes from a single producer, and the one that we're trying right now comes from three producers. Mm-hmm. So we basically buy from the three of them, we mix it, and we create a blend. That's what is known as a blend. And so this is, again, a very good quality coffee, but it comes from three different producers. We buy the coffee we pay the base price, the C price, and then we pay an additional 12% for the coffee all of the time. This week, this past month, actually, the coffee has been really cheap. However, it's been below 70 mil pesos, and so that's less than a dollar per pound. And so because of that, I created a thing called the Irving price floor, which basically I try to pay the farmers at least $1.10. That's how much I pay them. And I will never drop my price below that, regardless of how low the market price is. And so, again, this entire month has been really low, less than a dollar, and I have been able to keep that price at 80 mil pesos por arroba, which is, again, a little bit more than a dollar per pound.
Wow, that's incredibly low. Is there any chance that the market will pick up soon, do you think?
I do not believe so. It's just going to keep going low, especially now that we are just starting the new coffee season. So the maturation time is about to begin. In some places, it will start around May. Some places will start next month in April. So we are just barely a week away. So as the production increases by economics, it should go down pretty much. And so I do not think it's going to go up. It's going to keep going low. And this is very, how do you say that, worrisome?
It's going to worsen the situation for you and for the farmers.
That's right. And so it's not very good for the farmers, which is one of the reasons, and is one of the points that we're going to be mentioning here today, that some of the cafeteros, the coffee producing people of the Huila departamento, are going to be joining the strike that is happening right now, primarily in Cauca. But as of this morning, and this is unofficial news, the cafeteros are going to be closing the road from Huila to Bogota towards the end of the week or next week. So they, again, it's unofficial. They just told me because I sent coffee from Cauca, and to get here to Bogota, it has to pass through Huila, right? And so it affects me in a way, but that is part of the process, and I'm okay with that. I can figure out other things around. But again, they will be joining because the coffee prices are just so incredibly low, and the government, as of now, is not doing anything in particular to help solve the situation. So it's quite terrible as of now.
It's terrible and tense, of course. And those of you who've been following the news here in Colombia, because really internationally there's been no coverage at all. There have been blockades on the Pan-American Highway, so down in the south of the country into Cauca. These are not unique indigenous strikes. Let's get that clear. These are campesinos, so they're basically small farmers, Afro-Colombian communities and indigenous communities. Indeed, I know that coffee growers and rice growers are possibly going to join up. At one point, there are around 30,000 people striking. Tell us a bit more about this, Ervin, from your perspective as someone from the NASA people. Many of your community are there.
That's right. So the NASA, we are in total around a little bit more than 300,000 people, and the NASA are distributed in very many departamentos, actually. Mm-hmm. We are primarily from Cauca, from the east of Cauca, but we are in the valley of Cauca. We are in Tolima. We are in Putumayo. Some of us are here in Bogota as well, but primarily in Cauca. And so, a great number. So the great majority of the people who are at the strike are NASA, but there are many other tribes. So we have there most of the tribes from Cauca are there, the Huambianos. We have there the Yanaconas. We have there the Totoroes. We have there pretty much every indigenous tribe that there is in Cauca is there, including, of course, campesinos from the Bota Caucana and from the areas around Popayán, and along with them there is people from Caldas. The Emberas, that's right. The Emberas came all the way from Caldas to Popayán to support to Cauca, to support the strike there in Cauca. And so there is a lot of people. I do have relatives who are there at the strike right now. I am here in Bogota because of course I am doing I am doing coffee, and just wanted to also put something forward, which is that the indigenous communities are not what most people think they are, in that some people say that these are just a bunch of perezosos who want to get everything for free, but that's not really the case. And I say this as an entrepreneur that I am, and also as an indigenous person that I am. So what we're looking for is to create economic development, but in a sustainable way. And sustainability includes not just money, it also includes the environment and includes the people that is in the environment. Yeah. And so that's what we are looking for. And there are very many productive projects as of now by indigenous people. So right now we're producing rice, we're producing beer, we're producing coffee, we're producing panela. Most of the major products from the canasta familiar are being produced by indigenous people. So it's not like we want just the government to give us things for free. That's not the point of the strike, which is what some people try to say. When I want to stress that very much, because again, I as a person who use capitalism in a good way, I think that needs to be put forward and be so that everybody knows about it.
Yeah, it's the clarity that we need, because if we only looked at El Tiempo, El Espectador, we've got the one picture of, let's say, the unrest and violence, of course, because that's what sells newspapers, we know that. And then you've got the soundbite from the Minister of Defense, Botero, talking about all of the different conspiracy theories that he's selling, some of which may have base in fact and some which not. Mm-hmm. But tell us a little bit, I mean, there's a 10-point agenda that the people on strike are looking for. And tell us a little bit about it. I mean, I don't expect you to read out the 10 points, but what are the main items that the strikers are looking for?
Right. So again, there are 10 points. If we could summarize them in 3 points, I think the primary point is the environment. We need to take care of the environment, and that's basically to give more rights to the Mother Earth, to nature. To be able to protect it, and this includes many things, but perhaps the most important ones are minería. So there is mining, and the other one is an issue that is very, very pertinent to the Cauca, which is that some paper producing companies are growing a lot of pine trees very near these places where water, like the spring waters, and this is drying up a lot of rivers and streams very near Popayán. That's very pertinent to that case, and that also pertains a lot to the campesinos who live in the Popayán area, because these campesinos live off of these places that are irrigated by these bodies of water, and these are getting drained. Mm-hmm. And so this is again very pertinent in there. But the other things are issues such as the Iruitango situation, the oil spills in the north of Colombia, all of these different issues that pertain to nature. That's what we're looking to resolve. Mm-hmm. So that will be point number one. Point number two concerns directly with the peace process and the protection of social leaders, because there are most of the people who have been killed, most of the social leaders that have been killed, these are indigenous peoples, and most of these peoples are actually NASA. So more than 100 people from the NASA community alone have been killed because of this situation. So it pertains to us a lot. It's not just the NASA, but it does concern to the NASA a lot, because we are in a way one of the tribes that have been mostly affected by the situation.
Before we go on, why the NASA? Why have your people been targeted?
Right. So the NASA. I don't want to say this because I am a NASA, but because it's a fact.
Fine.
The NASA are the one of the biggest. I'm not quite sure if it's the biggest, but it's probably, if it's not the biggest, it will be the second largest indigenous groups in Colombia. And just to tell a little bit of a story, the NASA have been the only tribe that have been able to go against the government face to face and claim their own rights. So this began way, way back in the 1930s with Manuel Quintín Lame, which was the very first indigenous person, perhaps in Latin America. I'm not sure that there is another person in the contemporary world that started to claim his own rights before the government. And so he started some law on his own. And at some point, the situation did not go the way it should have gone. They created a guerrilla. It was called de Manuel Quintín Lame. However, that guerrilla was dismantled very quickly. It lasted just about a year or 2 years, I think. And then after that, the indigenous peoples said and made an agreement, and this is something that pertains to every indigenous person, that is that we will never take up arms. If a member of an indigenous community, especially the NASA, take up arms, they are immediately removed from the censo, from the indigenous census, and they no longer are part of the community. There is a process through which they may return if they were forced into it, but if they willingly go to take up arms, regardless of what faction they went to, they will be removed from the census. That's one thing that we have made very clear in the communities. That is that we will not take up arms.
Okay.
And so anyway, so this began in the 60s, and at that point, the Consejo Regional Indígena del Cauca was also created, and this is the first indigenous organization in Colombia, and one of the first in Latin America. And through that organization, other organizations were modeled and created after, such as the Organización Indígena de Colombia, the ONIC.
Yep.
And so that was modeled after the CRIC. And this and CRIC was primarily created by indigenous peoples of Cauca, but but especially the NASA, because the NASA are the largest. So of course we did have participation from the other tribes, but primarily this is a NASA model.
But you see, the NASA though are populate areas that are of great wealth, I guess, for these big companies.
That's right. So we live very near the mountains, near the páramos, where there is a lot of deposits of gold, oil, titanium, there is actually uranium as well. Really? And they have been trying to get into the land since I can remember, pretty much.
Yeah.
We have not allowed them, and that's why they hate us very much. And so, and also because we are great activists in terms of, again, rights. So the first EPS, the first, how would you say that in
health
English?
Insurance?
Health insurance organization in the country was created by the NASA.
It's, really? It's,
that's right. That is called the ICE. And the first tribe that created educación propia, so our own education, to start teaching native language to the kids, to the indigenous peoples, was also in Cauca, and this was also a NASA initiative. Mm-hmm. And so there are many other initiatives such as that, which is why the government and the ultra-right hates us very much, because they want to silence the people, and they want the people just to conform, such as most people do in the cities. But we do not. We do not conform, and we want our rights, and most of all, we want to be able to work and to contribute to the economic development, but in a sustainable way. And most people don't like that, because they just want to go and destroy the páramos. They want to go and do as they wish, and we cannot allow that. We as indigenous peoples, our belief is that nature is part of us, and that we are part of nature, and that this is a living organism that has exactly the same rights as we do. And so if we let somebody else to come in and violate that those rights, it's as if we let somebody into the house and let them rape our family, our very own family. And that's exactly the same way we see it.
Well, I mean, you know, your point of view on sustainable economy and family and respect for nature and Mother Earth doesn't sound unreasonable at all, but unfortunately you're on this area that, of course, the market forces and these multinationals want to get their hands on. Uranium, titanium, gold is what you say.
Right. I mean,
therein lays the problem of why so many NASA have been assassinated in these last few years.
Correct.
That's very terrible. It's a horrible story, this. But let's move to the rest of the points on this. On this agenda for the strike at the moment, we just did number three, I think.
So we were doing number two, which is what I was the peace process, so that concerns with the
peace process with the
caring as well, and also caring of the lives of social leaders.
Yeah.
And so the other thing that I think is very important and needs to be mentioned is that the government is using war as the only medium to get to a point of peace, which it doesn't make any sense, because that's not really how you achieve peace. I mean, when have you ever achieved peace in that way? You might achieve submission, but if the people are not happy, they will always go back to the initial state, which is a state of chaos and of war. And so that's what they are looking for. And part of that strategy, of that point, has to do with not making military service any longer a requirement, especially for campesinos. This is a point that concerns mainly to campesinos, because indigenous peoples already have the right to not go to do servicio militar, the military service. Because I'm NASA, I am not required to do it. So that's one of the points. The other point is to dismantle SMAD, which, although as we were talking with Richard, we do not believe that's going to happen, because
Yeah.
It's a very difficult thing, and the other thing is the dismantlement of the paramilitary groups, which again will be a really hard thing to do because they are the ones who are always threatening the indigenous peoples. I mean, the Águilas Negras are the ones who are always issuing those threats against indigenous leaders. They are the ones, and so that concerns with this kind of organizations, criminal organizations.
The paramilitary institutions. Groups are still active in your.
Oh, yeah, they are very, very much active. They are very much active, and they do as they wish, and they threat people as they wish. We, the indigenous, have resisted. We have not been able to... They have not been able to get away with what they want, as they have done in other places of the country. So they. I remember when I was younger, they did come into my territory, into Páez, and they started threatening everybody and saying that they needed to leave because otherwise they will come in and wipe everybody out. And they have done that in other parts of the country, such as in Antioquia. They have literally wiped out entire towns. But they never managed to do that with the NASA because the NASA. So the NASA has a very deep love for their own territory, for the land. But most of all, we have a philosophy where we say, you know, if they kill one, 1,000 will be born because we will always be here taking care of the environment, and nobody can come in and kick us out. And so they have not been able to do that, regardless of how much firepower they have. And I think that's why they especially hate us. And I don't think they will ever be able to do that because the NASA have been known for always being warriors, and they have resisted through colonization. One of the paths that went from Bogota to Popayan to Quito passes right through NASA territory, and not even with that fact they were able to eliminate our tribe as they did with many other tribes in the center of Colombia. So I do not think they will ever be able to finish the NASA. That's not going to happen.
You have a real pride in your culture and a real appropriation of the realities that affect them. So it's very special for us to have you here talking so openly about this. Now, what I worry about is we're seeing the strike, and you're talking about the history, and you're talking about the realities. The messages that are being sent or, you know, delivered by the government or infiltration, I would assume that these are messages that are sent out to delegitimize the strikes so that some of our more nefarious politicians here in Colombia will then say, it's the indigenous problem, it's this, it's that. I don't like to say that, but it's what the language they'll use. They'll say, they're all affiliated to the FARC, they're FARC sympathizers. But I get the feeling, I mean, there may be FARC members, there may not be, there may be army members, there may be, you know, but I get the feeling overall that, you know, the NASA people, to take your people as the example, just coexisted with the guerrilla groups. You know, you have to get on with life.
Right. I think,
would you say that's right, or would you correct me if I'm way out there?
Right. So, I mean, we have coexisted with very many armed groups because of the nature of this of the environment where we live. So I remember at some point when I was very young, seeing the army passing by carrying, you know, all of their cache of weapons, right? And at some point I also saw the guerrilla passing by. I mean, we did not live with them as if I were living with my family, but of course I did saw them because they were there. They were in the mountains, they were passing by, and things like that. But again, just to make that very clear, indigenous people that goes voluntarily to any of these groups are immediately kicked out of the of the indigenous groups. They are no longer part of the community, and so that's very important to mention. Now, what is happening in the strike is that there has been a lot of shooting against the people with live rounds against the people doing the strike, and the argument to do that is that supposedly the guerrilla had infiltrated the strike and they were shooting at the army, so the army had the right to shoot back, and they were literally shooting at everybody. And there has not been, not as of now that I know, anybody killed because of these bullets that were shot by the army to the indigenous peoples. But that's happened very frequently. Talking earlier, we were trying to figure out whether there was actually an infiltration or what was going on in there, if guerrilla members had infiltrated the strike. And as of now, I do not know exactly if the guerrilla had infiltrated. There is possibly, it could have possibly happened because there is so many people. There has been shootings from the side of the strike, and there has been shootings from the side of the army. Now the indigenous will not have been legally allowed to do that, of course. Yeah. I mean, this is not a thing that anybody in the leadership will allow, of course. What we do know for a fact is that this past weekend, the Guardia Indígena, which is kind of like the internal indigenous police who do not have guns, they only have their bastones de mandos, which is like this power stick. How do you call that?
It would be like a baton, wouldn't it? But it's sacred.
Right, it's sacred. It's not used for the purpose of violence. It's merely used for the purpose of signaling your leadership position, right? So the Guardia Indígena was able to catch three individuals who came from the army. These were actually army men who infiltrated the strike. So they went inside the strike and they blended with the people, and they were carrying rifles. They were also carrying grenades, and all of this was caught and it was exposed before the General Assembly of the strike of the indigenous peoples. And so you can see the pictures as well. The pictures are available online everywhere, and so that did happen. So on the side of the government, we can say that the government did infiltrate the strike. Their purpose is unknown. This is our own opinion. This is not official, but our own opinion is that they were trying to infiltrate, shoot back, and then say that this was the guerrillas, so that they had the right to shoot back and just do as they wish with the people doing the strike, which is something that they have done quite frequently. That's one of the issues. The second issue is there was a carro bomba, a car bomb that was placed very near the strike. The indigenous guardia managed to see this car bomb before it exploded, and they were able to do something there to stop that from blowing. Otherwise, it would have killed a lot of people. And that also happened this weekend. This is different from the bomb that exploded in the Valle del Cauca that killed eight indigenous members as well. That's very different. So there is a lot of confusion because there is so many people in there. As of now, there is not an official confirmation that the guerrilla has infiltrated. There might be in there some, but what is being confirmed is that the army did infiltrate the strike, and that they did not have very good intentions by being in there.
And of course, we didn't hear about this.
And nobody here. Okay, yeah. Exactly. So that's right. So, yeah. Richard, did you know about this? Because no. I don't believe you actually knew anything about this.
Nothing at all about this.
That's
I knew
right.
Nothing about this. And
exactly.
I read what I can, but then I get tired of reading
that's right. The
manipulation through this press.
That's right.
When we talk about these points that, the strikers, and let's say this again, these are small farmers, Afro-Colombian communities, indigenous populations, coffee growers, rice growers. We're looking at a vast community of strikers. But do we think that this government will fulfill any of these commitments or these demands?
Right. So there is I will say two important things to say in here. One is that no government has actually fulfilled any of the demands that the people have asked for. Mm-hmm. So they have gone there. Uribe went there. Santos went there, and so on. But they have met with the people. They have made agreements on paper. But as of now, they have not fulfilled all of the agreements that they were. were made in this kind of in this kind of meetings, which is why again the indigenous people are back to the Panamericana to ask back from the government to fulfill their promises, and they are not doing it. So that's one thing. On the other hand, the NAS are asking Duque, President Duque, to go there and talk with them. He is not been there yet. In my opinion, and we were saying this with here with Richard earlier, was that if he was just a little bit smarter, he would go there and at least show his face to the people, because that's what they are looking. In the end, regardless if you agree or disagree with him, he is the president of Colombia, right? And he should go and show their face to their people. I mean, if he can go to Venezuela, he should be able to go to Colombia, which is one of the things that really annoys us, because this is a pertinent issue that is happening in Colombia and that is affecting the entire southwest of Colombia, and he doesn't give a shit, literally, which is very, 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 it's just very sad. That's very saddening.
So, I mean, my interpretation is that the paro will be lifted at some point without any agreements made. It'll be, you know, agreement between the strikers to say, well, let's get on, we need to work, we can't continue here. And the government will then say how much money has been lost because the main highway to the south has been closed. But the tension will remain. It's March, April 2019. In a couple of months, we could see the paro again.
Yes, yes. So what is going to happen, in my opinion? So the indigenous peoples have said that they will stay there until the president comes. They have said that some of the other groups they did return home, but then as more groups joined, so like for example, as of now, the cafeteros have shown their support to the strike, but they are not physically at the strike. They did say, as I mentioned earlier, that they will be joining physically towards the end of this week or sometime next week. And they will be doing a strike in Huila. And so that will be closing the south of Colombia through every direction. So it will be closing through the way of the Pacific and then through the way of the Andes. So that will be the south will be completely closed, which is again really bad, because you know, if I were Duque, I would think, you know, he's an economist. I am an economist as well. Think about it in a rational manner, you know, because that's what we assume in economics, Mr. Duque. And if you think about it rationally, the more you delay going to see the people, the more resources are going to be lost, economically speaking, to the people. And in the end, the entrepreneurs, the business owners, they are not going to necessarily assume of the losses. The losses are going to be paid by the government, because you have the right to make demands, to make lawsuits for those losses that you incurred during the time of the strike. So the losses that are happening are not necessarily going to be paid by the business owners, but by the government. And in a way, it's affecting all of the Colombians, because part of that money, of course, comes from the taxpayers, but also part of that comes from the natural resources, from the how do you call those, the money that you get from selling oil and I forgot the name for those things. Well, anyways, that kind of money, yeah. Right?
Well, yeah, for those of us who, the small percentage of us who pay the taxes,
right,
a lot of the bill. Listen, we're out of time, but it's been a really revealing conversation, Ervin. Things that I had no idea about, but that's why I wanted to talk to you, so that we could get a little bit more of this information out there. You know, I've got a small listenership, but equally so, it goes a long way, and it's over, you know, various continents, and this doesn't get covered, so that we have the opportunity here to talk about it and perhaps bring some of these issues out into the open. So let me just say thank you so much, Ervin, Liz, for your time and your insights into this situation in southwestern Colombia.
Of course. Well, I'm glad to be able to share the truth, and I think the truth needs to be heard.
Okay. Well, thank you again. This has been Colombia Calling. I've been Richard McCall talking to Ervin Liz here in Bogota, episode 267. Thank you again for listening. Next week we'll be back, episode 268, and speaking to the academic and historian Matthew Brown, expert on, foreign migration to Colombia, but around the colonial period. So talking actually about the British Legion and things such as that. But this has been an excellent episode. I know many of you will have enjoyed that. I'll look forward to receiving your emails, feedback, columbiacalling@gmail.com. Of course, tweets @columbiacalling, and we're on Facebook too. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.